This is Ozarks at Large. Jeffrey Davis's new collection of poetry, Night Angler, is the 2018 James Laughlin Award winner from the Academy of American Poets. This follows his previous book, Revising the Storm, which won the A. Poulin Jr. Poetry Prize. And he'll be one of the authors at this year's Books in Bloom Literary Festival, Sunday afternoon at the Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs. He lives in Fayetteville and he teaches at the University of Arkansas. This week, he came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to discuss his new collection, Fatherhood, Life, and he says the fear he's had in the past that he would never be able to write another poem.
When I first started writing poems, I remember every poem I finished writing felt like it very well was my last poem. Like being inside of that act of writing was so clearly distinct from the act of not writing that after every new poem, I had moments of anxiety where, you know, maybe this never happens again. Maybe lightning isn't going to strike. And then another poem would happen. I'd think, oh, thank God, you know, this whatever this line to the poem for me was still returning. And then after a while, I just kind of got comfortable in the way in which I experienced the non-writing part of being an artist. And a part of that came with treating the margin as more porous. I often am working with, you know, early writers at the University of Arkansas. One of the first things I try to challenge them to think about is the margin of the page is being very porous, which is to say, what does it mean to not only ask the page to be the place where you're the most observant, you know, your best thinking, feeling, contemplative self? You know, this is the poem, having this conversation, trying to be present in this moment, walking out and engaging with loved ones or strangers. The way in which you walk through the world needs to be in conversation with the poem. Or what does it mean to ask your voice and your hands to be very intentional when you're making art and then look up and be no different in the world. So I think having that porous relationship to my craft has kind of quieted the fear or evolved the fear, maybe.
It's probably more
accurate.
So does one feed the other? If you're being intentional in the art with the words in the poem, that helps you be more intentional alive and vice versa?
That's the prayer.
Yeah.
And also in particular with the work in both books. So the first book is really trying to get underneath the kind of myth of my father, how looming he's been in my life, to reclaim the word father. And then now with the new book, being a father myself and coming into my own or continuing to come into my own, I need this work to impact how my relationship develops with my son in a very real and scary way.
Yeah. Do you mind reading a selection from
sure.
Night Angler?
Yeah, I'll read the title poem, which is the first poem I remember writing after Revising the Storm. The Night Angler. A headlamp guides me through October cornfields. Along the slender cross ties of bridges, bulky in waders, I sidestep thick briar, patches of poison ivy, all the way to the river's edge, where I kill the lamp. And soon the moon's blue albedo is enough to enter water, with dreamfish prowling the currents. I begin casting toward the far, cloaked bank, all ear, all fixed on the grim swish of my streamer threshing back and forth, a mad bat parting night air. In time, I will lead my own boy into the precision of this contraction inside the throat, this animal alarum in the dark. When my first cast conjures nothing, no monster trout panicking the line, I slide further into the river's cold, send more barbed asking through deep shadow. I labor long to lure a sudden swallow, the wilderness of hunger pulsing on the other end of these hands.
My favorite part of that poem is going in the water and not getting the bite and then going further. Yeah. I mean, those of us who read poetry that we don't write, we leap at these metaphors that we think you, the author, might have, but that just strikes at so much of what life is. You go for that bite.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm a longtime angler and started fly fishing when I moved to Pennsylvania. And became close with my friend James, who the poem is dedicated to. And we'd been fishing for years, and he was sort of my guide. And, you know, unendingly enthusiastic, you know, and supportive. And I remember when he first asked me to go, let's go fly fishing at night. He'd been doing it a little bit, and the way, at least in those river systems, so brown, the largest brown trout in the system, they usually feed at night. And so you have the chance to catch the fish of your life, you know, and he's telling, you know, he's been scouting different pools and assuring me that it would be safe, that they wouldn't be deep pools that you could drown in. And all his enthusiasm created this image in my mind of what it was going to be like. And then when we got to the river, I remember being so afraid.
It sounds spooky.
Terrified. I was terrified and then uncomfortable. Like, I was like, why am I so afraid? And to the point where there were moments when we were headed to the river where I almost was going to say, can we go back? I changed my mind. And so it was a really, really intense experience because I was trying to grapple with and wrestle and put to ease, like, my fear. And for a long time, there were drafts I wrote of that poem that the first draft was actually, it was addressed to my friend James. There was a you in the poem. And for a while, I was trying to understand, like, what is this fear about? Is this my fear of belonging, of community? Am I trying to claim this togetherness through this dark? Is that what's sort of unsettling me? And, you know, how much of it is mortal fear and how much of it is, you know, is kind of psychology, you know? And I wrote draft after draft with that in mind, trying to push that. And it wasn't until my son shows up in the poem and I realized, no, you want to pass on this thing that you fear and you don't even understand that fear. And it hasn't changed the fact that you want to invite your boy into this. And that's when the poem turned on and for me. But it took months and months of drafts of really trying to push and pressure the poem through form and through psychology. Yeah.
Do you visually see that location when you're writing?
In that poem in particular, it was one of those rare poems that was sort of one-to-one. I mean, actually, I guess this book has a lot more of those moments, sort of witnessing my son do things or my partner and son interacting in certain ways and having those moments in the present be catalysts that I can feel. There's something, there's some sort of observation that's happening that I think is becoming a poem. But that place, because it's such a place-based poem. And there was one draft where I was like, maybe it's about this place. Maybe that's why I'm struggling. And so there was one draft where it's like the title of the river that we were going to. And a part of it, too, is trying to get that experience of walking through the dark, both knowing where you're going because you've been there before and then having it be made terribly strange by doing it in a different context, too. Right. And even the metaphors for fatherhood, right? Like, I had practiced this thing in the light, and I was so reliant on the visual to feel, am I doing this accurately? Is this successful? And then having the lights turn off and having to realize how low my literacy was for the other dynamics of angling, which is like timing and feeling. And then, as you said, that sort of fear of, you know, in the dark, all you have is that take of that fish. And you're kind of wondering, like, do I actually want to feel this? You know, do I actually want to feel this, you know, fish of a lifetime hit this fly in a way that I'm not even ready for? And so there's moments of, you know, getting the thing you're asking for and having it scare you. And that sounds like a metaphor for fatherhood to me, too.
It also sounds like a metaphor for a career.
Yes.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
you've had a terrific 12 or 15 months, New Yorker and awards. I'm sure that this is what a poet wants, yeah. Recognition and readership.
Yeah.
And now you have it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that ever unsettling?
Oh, 1,000%.
Okay.
In fact, I a very good mentor now, friend, Julia Spiger-Kasdorf, when my first book was coming out, I remember her pulling me aside and kind of asking me, like, how are you doing as the book was getting ready to come out? And I was like, I'm good, you know, I think I'm fine. And she was like, well, and she kind of invited me to confront or realize how just that, you know, you're putting all this effort and time and study and then when the thing manifests, that sometimes that can be traumatic. And I remember seeing, so I thought it was fine. And then the box of books arrived and my wife came home to me with a full glass of whiskey poured. And she was just like, what's wrong? And it's like, all I could do is point at the book. And I remember it took me a long time to settle with that. And having grown up and moved around so much, like I felt like I already had this ongoing string of people that I'd known and developed some sort of love and care for that then I had to let go by being, you know, displaced so much as a child. And while the contact was gone, the sort of worry and concern and wonder of how they were in the world was very much still a part of me. And what I'd realized I'd just done is just amplify the number of connections I had to the world without being able to then check in and see, like, are you okay? And it wasn't until I had this dream that allowed me kind of let that go, to realize that it's always going to be okay. How silencing that worry and anxiety was it was a big deal when the first book came. This book is more, so Night Angler, I knew I couldn't wait to start this conversation. And there are poems in here that address a son speaker. So my son will be 8 this summer. And there are conversations that I'm starting in this book that, like, I don't know if right now is the right time to have that conversation. But I know I can't wait. And so it's a different kind of anxiety about whose hands this book finds. I mean, it's still similar, but because there's such an intimate and clear sense of, like, I wrote this book to put into my son's hands. But then, of course, the anxiety this time was when the book arrived. I realized, like, I didn't know when that was. Like, when do I give this book to him? And I woke up from a nap, and he was reading from the book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then he's reading to my wife, and then they saw that I was awake, and they came over, and he started reading to it from me. And I was talking about this the other day. Like, it's been a long time since I had to try not to weep in front of somebody so that they'll keep speaking. And the way in which people will do sometimes sort of take something that you have an impossible time with answering and gracefully kind of leap over that for you. And then he got to a poem in the book that's about a mole that's on his body, and he got really upset. And I was like, no, read it. And he read the poem, and he was like, okay, this is a good book. You know? So at least I got that one right. I don't know about all the others. But you know.
Yeah, I was going to ask anyway about the sense of responsibility when you do write about events with friends, with family.
Yeah.
The sense of responsibility you feel putting that down, because you want to be as honest as possible.
Yeah.
But someone might pick it up and read it and recognize it.
Yeah, and be hurt by it, or disappointed or confused even.
Right.
And I've had those experiences, especially with my mother. And I understand that that's her integrity of, like, revisiting the mistakes that she's made. And I think as a person and as a poet, I owe her for that kind of integrity of considering and reconsidering and, you know, asking and demanding, you know, obsessively and wondering if you return to the past, you know, can you understand how things went down so that you can have perhaps a different present or a different future. So I think because of that sensitivity, she's the person that I've, in my experience, has responded intensely in ways that I wasn't expecting. But I think I've come to appreciate and understand, and you know, that's the obligation that I want to be aware of. So I don't shy away from those. But in fact, so to add to that, so my son, we were at the Arkansas Literary Festival a couple weeks ago, and he was in the audience, and he raised his hand towards the end of the Q&A. It was funny. He was like, this is for Jeffrey Davis. And he asked, like, why do you write about your life? Why do you tell people about us? And I had to take probably a good 15 seconds just to process. And I was with Jericho Brown, and he was next, and I was like, no, I'm good. I'm here. I'm just, this is the moment that I've been begging for, in a way, by writing this book. And my answer to him was, you know, because I'm afraid about, you know, the history that I've been inherited, that the sort of legacy that I've inherited, and how much of that I'll pass on to you without wanting to. So I'm trying to start a story that I invite you to, you know, challenge, confirm, push back. Like, I'm trying to get it right, and I need your help. And this is my best method of hearing the things that are in my voice that I don't want there. This is my best way of testing how much of, as there's a line in the poem, like, how much of the badness of my father have I exercised from my voice so that I can start a story with you that is wholly other from this other one.
Jeffrey Davis's latest book is Night Angler. He teaches at the University of Arkansas and lives in Fayetteville. He'll be at the Books in Bloom Literary Festival Sunday at the Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs. You can learn more about the festival at booksinbloom.org.